Thank you, Cheryl. Good evening, everyone. I'm very excited as we're starting the Tao Te Ching this week. And I'm also very excited because I purchased a 100-foot cable. So now I am plugged in to the Ethernet and hopefully will not have a problem with mics anymore. Yay! So that's good. So I thought we would keep the practice that we had when we were looking at the Bhagavad Gita of just this sort of moment before our time together of offering our time as service to others, a consecration, even though we are moving into a new teaching from a different region of Asia. So just to start off, we're just going to close the eyes and sort of feel into the body, and just allowing things to settle. And also allowing that if things don't want to settle, we'll allow them not to settle, and then they'll magically settle. So just calming the mind down, moving into that internal world. And then from here, we're just going to make a silent offering in whatever words suit you, to share our time together this evening for the benefit of all beings. So, whatever we hear, whatever we share, whatever we say, may it bless all beings. And then we'll take a deep breath in together and exhale. Okie doke. So yes, this week we are starting with the Tao Te Ching. And there is a reason for me wanting to look at the Tao Te Ching, or I say I wanted to. I felt a couple of months ago that it started nudging me to that it was going to be in my life in some way. And I've never read the Tao Te Ching before. I studied it in the ministry program with Regina. And many, many years ago as a teen, I didn't understand a word of it back then though. And it sort of just kept nagging and nagging and nagging. And I thought, I definitely think this is what's going to come next in this Eastern wisdom teachings. And then before I knew it, everywhere I looked, there were Lao Tzu quotes. I went to a friend and she pulled an angel card out for me, and it was a picture of Lao Tzu, which kind of blew my mind. So that was fun. So I feel like I'm on the right track. But one of the reasons that I've wanted to work through the Tao Te Ching and have the opportunity to work through it with other people, is that I have a sense that I don't know about you, but that there's a real rushing at the minute, I'm one of those people who, I pick up a book and I think this is it, and I read half of it, and then I order another book, and then another book, and another book, and I read them. I read like 18 books at a time, but it feels like I'm a little frantic with my spiritual path. And what the Tao says to me is, be still, be very still. And we're going to talk a bit about the history of the Tao in a little bit, just so you get some idea of where it comes from and what these teachings are. And then we'll look at the first chapter and talk about how we might look at it over the week, and then hopefully come together next week and share any contemplations we had, and then look at chapter two together, and we'll go on from there. And if that all seems a little too slow, we'll speed it up. But at the moment, I'm sensing that maybe it's just lovely to contemplate something short, because if you're not familiar with the Tao, and I'll explain a bit more in a bit, but very short chapters, and also quite inspired by nature, a lot of it, which was another reason I was sort of very interested in the Tao. I'm actually training in sort of to be a shaman at the moment. I'm very drawn to a nature path. And so I was sort of really interested in the Tao Te Ching, as it I feel personally, and this is just my personal interpretation, that it inspires you to be outside and sit with the teachings and see what arises. So yeah, lots of sort of I'm very excited all over, really, to be here on Monday evenings with other people looking at the Tao. So I'm going to be using the Stephen Mitchell translation of the Tao Te Ching. It is actually free online as well. There's a PDF version of it, should you not want to purchase the book. And if you just Google Stephen Mitchell translation Tao Te Ching, you'll see it pop up in the on the first page. And then I have, in typical me fashion, bought another 15 books on the Tao to just sort of complement my contemplation. But I'm trying to look at them as just sort of supportive readings. So what I'm hoping is to read the teaching, the chapter. Yes, it is the one we used in MPP, Kathy asks. Yes, it is, Stephen Mitchell. So what my aim is really is to read that Stephen Mitchell translation and then really go within and hear what the voice within says in contemplation rather than sort of turning to everyone else's opinions. But I do find that reading other people's contemplations and hearing them really is also helpful. So I'm hoping we'll cultivate that as a group together. But I will also be sharing some of these other thoughts. So, yes, the book of the Tao, the book of the way, the Tao Te Ching. Tao Te Ching has, I've never seen the same translation of it. And it's essentially a book about moving into the essence of Tao. Some people say the Tao, and it's spelled T-A-O, but it's pronounced with a D, Tao, and then Te is pronounced with a D as well, Tao Te Ching, or Tao Te Jun. And it's sometimes translated as Book of the Way. So Tao you might see as the way. It's also, as we'll uncover in a little bit when we look at chapter one, you know, perhaps related to God or the force or oneness or the emptiness, the void, a little more around emptiness than God per se, because God comes in a little somewhere in between. But there is this essence that it's not a thing. The Tao, it is like a process almost, which is why the way is sometimes used. So it's a place that we move into balance. So it all sounds a little bit mumbo jumbo, but hopefully that'll sort of clear up as our time together goes on and you experience the Tao for yourself. So I wanted to share with you a bit about history because it was fascinating to me, in case you're wondering where it comes from. So I'm going to just read, and this is by Solala Cowler, and again, this will be on the Awakening Together page. I sent Cheryl the suggested readings earlier, and Solala Cowler's book's mentioned in that, so you can always look at that later. And this is what he says. So scholars argue, as scholars do, as much about the identity of the author of Chang Tzu, which is another book, as they do about the Tao Te Ching. I like to believe in the story of Lao Tzu and his ride into the Western frontier on the back of his stolid ox. So Lao Tzu is thought to be the head of the Royal Archives for the royal court of Chao about 2,500 years ago, the Chao dynasty. It's thought that Lao Tzu was sort of the chief philosopher and librarian there. The Chao dynasty had been a long and creative one, but now it was becoming decadent and corrupt. China was about to enter the Warring States period, when the old rules of honour and chivalry were dying out. And if you sort of think, and if you're into this, about 2,500 years ago, there was the shift to the shift in the ages happening. So there's a lot of unrest around that time. China was about to enter this warring states period when the old rules of honor and chivalry were dying out. China became a group of small kingdoms that fought each other for dominance. Lao Tzu decided to leave the capital, and accompanied by one student, it is said he set out on an ox, sure-footed, if plodding beast, the ox, and headed out to the far west wilderness. When he reached the frontier border gate, he met one of his students, who begged him to write down some of his teachings so that they would not disappear with him. So Lao Tzu spent two nights writing this small book of 81 chapters, using a little over 5,000 characters, expounding his philosophy of Tao. He then mounted his noble steed and headed off to the mountains, never to be seen again. So that's one theory about Lao Tzu. And then, like the authors of the Yoga Sutras and the Bhagavad Gita, there are other myths that maybe it was more than one person. And maybe he went off and then taught elsewhere, you know, a bit like the stories of Jesus. We hear so many different stories about what could have happened. But this one is sort of the traditional story told about Lao Tzu. And here a few words about Taoism seem appropriate, says Salala Taula. The ideas and philosophy of what we now call Taoism were already long established when Lao Tzu wrote the Tao Te Ching. So Taoism sort of sprung from the Tao Te Ching, but the philosophy itself was there far, far before that. And he says that Taoism originated from the ancient shamanic roots of Chinese civilization. So many of the modern practices of internal alchemy and qigong that we associate with Taoism actually have their roots in these shamanic elements. And in ancient times, this path wasn't called Taoism. It just wasn't called anything. It was just the way it was, which is interesting given the Tao is sometimes referred to as the way. And Salala Taula says it was just an attitude towards life, health, and spiritual cultivation. It wasn't really until the second century AD that an organized form of Taoism emerged. And partially, some scholars say that was in response to the popularity of Buddhism in China. And actually, interestingly, it's thought that Taoism actually inspired Zen Buddhism. There was some sort of fusion between Buddhism and Taoism, because Zen Buddhism has, it's very, it embraces this idea of Wu Wei, which we'll talk about a lot, which is sort of non-doing, and also has these very natural elements within it, Zen Buddhism, which is very similar to Taoism. And he goes on, Taoism has a long history stretching back to the Yellow Emperor, Huang Di, who is said to have reigned during the middle of the 3rd millennium BC. And it continues down the ages through Lao Tzu, a gentleman called Chuang Tzu, who we'll also meet later, and other invisible sages who carried on these ancient traditions. So currently, he says there are two streams of Taoism in China. There's Tao Jia and Tao Jo. And the first is what's like called the philosophical classic Taoism, where they look at the teachings of Lao Tzu and of Chuang Tzu. And the second, Tao Jo, is the more recent development of Taoism, and that is almost like a religion. There are monks and there's ritual and liturgy, although they obviously base their religion off of the Tao Te Ching. So for many centuries, Salala Taula says, Taoism was an informal way of life. It was just simply the way, a way followed by the peasant, the farmer, the gentleman philosopher, and the artist. It was a way of deep reflection and learning from nature, which was considered to be the highest teacher. Followers of the way studied the stars in the heavens and the energy that lies deep within the earth. They meditated upon the energy flow within their own bodies. So this is what we know from Tai Chi and Qigong, this movement of Qi. And they mapped out the roads and paths that it travelled upon. So it led to traditional Chinese medicine, for example. And he goes on, yes. So this is how today we'll see Chinese medicine, Feng Shui, came from Taoism, Qigong, Tai Chi, internal alchemy. There's also Taoist sexual cultivation, there's meditations, and there's also astrology. And some of the basic principles of Taoism are Wu Wei, this not doing, something called the watercourse way. And the Tao is full of sort of analogies to water and allowing ourselves to become like water, to flow like water. And it also talks about yin and yang, which we will be talking about. So that is just sort of a bit of background on, say, Taoism and how the Tao Te Ching sort of emerged. So it was already there, and then it just sort of got put down into a book, and then, as things do, became at some point a religion. Although it's still very much seen as this gentle shamanic pathway, which I just love. So, okay. So I thought we would talk about how to come to the Tao. So I'm just going to read the first chapter to you so you can get a sense of it, and then we'll come back to it a bit later, because otherwise you'll sort of wonder what the hell I'm talking about. It would just sound like a concept. So just read chapter one. It's just a few lines. And it says, "The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things. Free from desire, you realize the mystery. Caught in desire, you see only the manifestations. Yet mystery and manifestation arise from the same source, and this source is called darkness. Darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding." So you can see already it's a little bit sort of riddle-like. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. So sometimes when people come to the Tao, they read the first couple of chapters and go, well, this is just mumbo-jumbo, and I'm not understanding a word it says. So, but there is a specific way of coming to the Tao, and I thought I'd share that with you. And so that maybe as we contemplate it together over the coming weeks, we can share with each other what works for us. There are three people's views on coming to the Tao I wanted to share with you. One is Eckhart Tolle's. He loves the Tao. And if you have time, I did set up a YouTube playlist, which I'll share also on the page on Awakening Together. But you can Google Eckhart Tolle and the Tao, and he has 9 short audios where he highlights some of the things he loves about the Tao and some of the teaching. Then Wayne Dyer. I was surprised to know this. I didn't know this, but Wayne Dyer was really inspired by the Tao. He wrote an entire book of contemplated for a year the Tao. And he talks a little bit about how he contemplated it, which I'm going to share with you. And then there is Takuan Soho's, a Zen Buddhist, and he has a translation of the Tao Te Ching and talks a little bit about how he came to the Tao. And I just thought this would help us as we're looking at the Tao. As I say, it can be a bit mind-boggling when we first read it. The Tao is not the Tao, and the name is not the name. What on earth is all this? So I'm going to attempt to play the audio of Eckhart Tolle's. It's just a couple of minutes. It's a snippet. His view on how to come to the Tao. And I'm not entirely sure it works if I play it through the computer, whether you can hear it. So if you don't mind just typing into the room if you can or can't hear the lovely Eckhart Tolle talking about the Tao for a minute. Okay, here we go.
I have a little treat in store. We will talk about, not only talk about, but go into the essence of the book that has been with me, accompanied me for the past 30 years. A book that I've gone to, back to periodically, I still go back to periodically, pick it up, read a page or two or three, and meditate on it. It's one of the great treasures of spiritual literature and it is a book that was written in China 2,500 years ago, the Tao Te Ching. Now that's a huge, seemingly a huge gulf that separates us from that time period. And yet the book is still vitally alive. And if a book that was written so long ago is still vitally alive, it means it must have been written from a very deep place and point to something that is timeless. If it were not written from a deep, timeless place within the author and did not point to something that is beyond time, a book written 2,500 years ago would be irrelevant, meaningless, incomprehensible. Many books that were written 20 years ago are out of date. Or if you read yesterday's newspaper, it's out of date. So, for something to still be alive now and to be deeply meaningful to many people, there must be something there that is timeless, and that is the essence of the book, and that's what I would like to go into with you. So we are not going into a book, we are not going to study a book, we are just using the text to go deeply within, to discover something within ourselves. So all that the book is a device that helps us discover ourselves and our connection with the greater whole, the universe, whatever you want to call it.
Okay. So I thought that was really helpful in that reminding us that we're not trying to understand a book. We're not coming at it as if we're reading a textbook. What we're trying to do is just sort of allow it to come to us, or allow it in, sort of enter into its essence, and as he says, use it as a bridge to this Tao itself, this Tao that doesn't have a name. In fact, the minute you try and say the word Tao, you're not in the Tao anymore. And I think we sort of have an understanding of that. Of course, it's just hard to talk about it and certainly to read about it. So I thought that was helpful from Eckhart Tolle. And then Wayne Dyer's perspective was very helpful. And he has some tips for how to come to the Tao as well. So he says in his book, Living the Wisdom of the Tao, again, this will be on the Eastern Wisdom page. One of the many gifts of the Tao Te Ching is its mind-stretching quality, especially in the way that Lao Tzu uses irony and paradox to get you to look at life. It's like those Zen cones that we've talked about in the past. There's this riddle that becomes like a gateway. If you think that being forceful is the appropriate response, Lao Tzu then urges you to see the value in being humble. If action seems called for, he asks you to consider non-action. If you feel that grasping will help you, he counsels you to let go and be patient. So what is this thing called the Tao? As we're told in this first verse, the name it is, to name it is to lose it. And here's the best I can come up with. This is Wayne Dyer. The Tao is a supreme reality, an all-pervasive source of everything. The Tao never begins, never ends, does nothing, yet animates everything in the world of form and boundaries, which is often referred to as the world of 10,000 things in the Tao. Commentaries on the Tao generally interpret it as a way, Te as shape or power, how the Tao manifests. So sort of Tao is this essence, Te is the manifest world, and then Ching is book. Every translation I read referred to the Tao as the way with a capital W, and then De as light or color to the way. Well, as I look at the name I've carried with me, Wayne Dyer, I realise that what may have attracted me to studying and writing these essays is the fact that I have Way in my name. So I'm just sharing his personal story. In The Wisdom of China and India, Dr. Lin Yutang says, if there is one book in the whole of Oriental literature which should be read above all others, it is Lao Tzu's Book of Tao. It is one of the most profound books in world philosophy. As you are writing this book, this is Wayne Dyer speaking, was complete surrender to ideas that didn't always seem to fit a linear rational approach. And this is very much the way of the Tao. Like when you read through the Tao, it becomes confusing because it doesn't seem to follow a linear path. You're reading a chapter about something and then you're reading a chapter about something else. And some of that I said is deliberate to keep you sort of always sort of moving around and never in this sort of linear fashion that we're always in, but beginning to open up to a different way of being, a different way of seeing. It has changed me, says Wayne Dyer. It's unexplainable and unnameable. Once I knew I'd be spending a year on the project, its creation came about in the following way. And then he talks about how he approached the Tao. He says, I awake before 4 a.m., meditate, consume juices, and enter my writing space. And I have some framed drawings of Lao Tzu on my counter. I ease into the work and I read a verse of the Tao Te Ching, letting the words stay with me and inviting the forces of both the outer and inner life to inform me. Some of the passages contain ideas that seem to be directed to political leaders, and we'll see this. The Tao Te Ching is seen as a book very much for leaders. And as I mentioned earlier, around the time it's believed that this was penned, we're moving from Aries, the age of Aries, into the age of Pisces. And the age of Aries was an age of war, and it said that as it was sort of coming out, I mean, the whole period of Aries was very warlike, but as it was moving out of that time period, things sort of got churned up. And so this was seen very much as a guide for that time, which seems very relevant today also. So he says, I jot down a few notes and then for 3 days I just think about what Lao Tzu is offering, and I invite the Tao to be with me throughout the day in all my activities as a background. And I feel the Tao with me, always there, always doing nothing and always leaving nothing undone. As I am now seeing with a capital S, the landscape starts to look different. The people I see are godly creations who are ignoring their own nature, or rather interfering in the affairs of others. And the Tao is very much, as we'll see, about this non-doing, this Wu way, about letting things be as they are and letting yourself settle into the middle way, into the balance between the yin and the yang, and the feminine and the masculine, and the war and the peace, of just finding this middle ground. I feel more peaceful and patient, says Wayne Dyer, and I'm reminded of the cyclical nature of the world, of the 10,000 things, and have powerful insights that change what I see. Following my day's thinking and then applying this wisdom, I look into the eyes of Lao Tzu's picture in early morning and I ask, what did you mean? How does this apply to my life? What happens next, he says, is mind-blowing in that it simply comes. And for Wayne Dyer, he had this practice of asking Lao Tzu, tuning in, and then sort of marinating on it for a few days. And then when he sat down to contemplate, and he obviously had intended to share these contemplations as a book, he essentially had automatic writing. And he says, the words arrive in the world of the 10,000 things, but I don't own it and I can't touch it. I'm grateful, bewildered, astonished and overjoyed. So he says, it's my vision that our world must recruit future leaders who are steeped in the importance of Lao Tzu's words. Our survival may depend on understanding the concepts of enemy and war can cease to exist through living a Tao-centered life. And that's certainly one teaching of the Tao, but it's not just about war and peace. It's a lot about just bringing that peace into our own lives, not having the war and peace within our own lives, but having, having peace but not war in our own lives. Yet the lessons and truths of the Tao, says Wayne Dyer, must be discovered and applied by individuals. In this way, it can bring you to the enormous wonder of your own being. You are the Tao at work. And that's one of the most beautiful things I think about the Tao, and as we explore it and contemplate it together, we'll begin to see that the Tao is a way, the Tao is a process, the Tao is the source, the Tao is us, the Tao moves through us, and within that we become the Tao. Everything is the Tao. Your being came from it and will return to it. So for maximum enjoyment and benefit, make reading the Tao your personal journey. He says, peruse one of the passages and then contemplate it. Spend some time applying it. Change the way you've been conditioned to think. Let yourselves open up to a new way of ideas and of thinking. And then finally, sort of express yourself in whatever way you're called to. And one of the things that I enjoy doing, and I would hope that we might share over this period, is that, and I definitely get this from the Tao, more so than I did with the Bhagavad Gita, because the Bhagavad Gita is very rich in story, and the Tao is almost very dry. So what that allows for is really sort of creative expression to come through. So, sorry about that. So you can, what I'm hoping is to, in the contemplation of the Tao, be inspired to draw more, or to write, or to paint, to write poetry, or to build a nest, or collect stones in nature and build a mandala. Those kinds of things that can come through you when we're not rushing. As you know, I read the chapter one to you, there's not much to it, so there's a lot of freedom to dive in, allow it to move through you and explore it, and have the Tao come through you and express itself. So I'm sorry, I'm just going to turn my email alert off so that doesn't keep happening. There we go. So then he shares something from Den Ming Tao, which is a person. If you spend a long period of time in studying self-cultivation, you will naturally enter Tao. And some people say the Tao, and some people just say Tao. By doing so, you also enter a world of extraordinary perception. You experience unimaginable things, receive thoughts and learning as if from nowhere, perceive things that you could be classified as prescient. Yet if you try to communicate what you experience, there is no one who can understand you, and no one who can believe you. The more you walk the road of the Tao, the farther you are from the ordinary ways of society. You may see the truth, but you will find that other people would rather listen to performers. If you are known as a follower of the Tao, people may seek you out, but they are seldom the ones who will truly understand. To speak to them of the wonders you have seen is to engage in a futile bout of miscommunication. That is why it's said that those who know do not speak. And I find this very interesting because I'm so passionate about the Tao. And yet every time I try and talk about it, I have really no words. I just kind of go, well, go and sit by a waterfall and see how you feel, or something like that. They'll be like, oh, okay, that's not really helpful. So he says, why not simply stay quiet? Enjoy Tao as you will. Let others think you're stupid. Inside yourself, you will know the joys of the Tao's mysteries. And if you meet someone who can profit from your experience, you should share with them. But if you are merely a wanderer in a crowd of strangers, the wisdom would be to stay silent. And the Tao is very much like this. It's be still, be silent, be unnoticeable. It mentions later in a chapter, you know, you'll know your success if no one even knows you're there, that you lead without leading. Perhaps the overriding message of the Tao is to learn how to luxuriate in the simplicity of what you're being told throughout this ancient sacred text. And again, that's why I was very drawn to it, just this idea that sometimes on our spiritual path, there is a bit of overwhelm going on. There is so much to read. There are so many audios to listen to. There are so many lovely things on YouTube that we can catch up on that we end up sort of, I find that my lists just end up getting longer and longer of things. Oh, well, I want to read that, and then I wanted to listen to that audio. And I begin dreaming of an 8-hour road trip so I can actually just hear all the things I want. And so what I thought would be just so lovely about the Tao is to return to just absolute simplicity. This very short chapter, you carry it around with you for a week and you see what emerges, and you allow it to sort of inform you and just let it be. And he concludes, as you put its ideas into practice, you'll discover how profound it all is, but then you'll find yourself startled by its simplicity and naturalness. The advice of this ancient master is so easy to apply that don't try to complicate it. Simply allow yourself to stay in harmony with your nature, which can be trusted if you listen and act accordingly. I hope you'll fall joyously in love with Lao Tzu and his wondrous Tao Te Ching, and that you'll add your light and colour to the Great Way. That's very beautiful. And then just a very short offering from Takuan Soho's Zen teacher. And he says, Lao Tzu's book is not like reading ordinary books. One should not get caught up or bogged down in literal meanings. Do not try and read it from that viewpoint. In some places, this book presents analogies. And in some, it starts from analogy and then works its way into some sort of intent. So there's something difficult to grasp about what he's saying. It's like a dream and like a shadow, which I think is just such a beautiful, perfect description of the Tao. You look for it and you cannot grasp it, and yet you know it's there somewhere. Just when you think you found the basic idea, it's a metaphor. And when you think it's a metaphor, it's suddenly the basic idea. It's one of those that always keeps you on your toes. You read it and you think, I've got it. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. You've completely understood. And you start to say, oh, it's like that lesson in A Course in Miracles when it says that, or it's like the Gita when it talks about this. But that's not the point of the Tao. The Tao is, you're not trying to get anything. You're just trying to sit and allow it to be. And Takuan Soho goes on, even so, this in itself is Lao Tzu's basic intent, that you end up in this sort of realm of a dreamlike kind of state where you can't quite put your finger on anything. And this is because his basic intent is emptiness. And this is what we talked about at the beginning, which is why there's so many similarities between Taoism and Zen Buddhism and Buddhism in general, that the intent there of the Tao is to be empty. And there are some beautiful chapters about becoming an empty vessel that we'll be looking at. When you read with this in mind, you should then be able to understand, which is a paradox in itself, that you read from this place of not trying to understand, that somehow you understand. Otherwise, you just simply won't. To sum up Lao Tzu's approach, insofar as the world is as it appears, the way to is as it appears. Thus, it's not something to which people might contrive to attach various conceptions, judging it this way, judging it that way, judging it right or wrong. In other words, it's just as is, which is almost a relief, because when you read the Tao, you don't have to think anything, you don't have to judge anything, you're just reading it, you're just sitting with the essence. And I don't know about you, but I wonder if it's a collective feeling that we may be sharing at the moment, I don't know, but as part of Regina's sort of I always get it wrong because there are a few words in it, gentle healing meditation group, gentle sharing and healing meditation group, where we're working through A Course of Miracles on Tuesday evenings, consistent healing. Thank you, Kathy. At the beginning, we were sort of encouraged to just let go of the mind trying to understand the workbook. And really just to allow for what is, and not to berate ourselves, but just to do it. Just to do it without any judgment or thought, just following it. And that's really how I feel also about the Tao, that you read it and it's there for you. And Cheryl says, like any spiritual book I read, I focus on leaving my preconceived notions of what I'm about to read. Yeah. And then it's almost taking it one step further of any notions that arise while you're reading it, throwing them out too. And just you're aiming for the essence, the experience. Okay, so how are we doing? Right. So I read one version, and that was Stephen Mitchell's of chapter one, and I thought I would read a couple of different versions. Then we'll have a very brief chat about it, and then we'll kind of listen to some music and wrap it up. And well, the next week we'll really get going, because we'll have had a whole week with chapter one, and hopefully we'll be able to share some things that we've come across. So we read, we read Stephen Mitchell's, that I said is free online. And then I'm just going to read Wayne Dyer's version of this first verse, which I actually kind of prefer. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. I've heard this before. The Tao is both named and nameless. As nameless, it is the origin of all things. As named, it is the mother of the 10,000 things. Ever desireless, one can see the mystery, but ever desiring, one sees only manifestations, and the mystery itself is the doorway to all understanding. And then the final version is Salala Taula's. This is a little different. Tao that can be spoken is not true and eternal Tao. Names that can be named are not true and eternal names. Non-being is the origin of heaven and earth. Being is the mother of the 10,000 beings. Therefore, in the realm of non-being, one can see the mysterious source of all things. In the realm of being, one can see the manifestations of Tao. These two have the same origins but are called by different names. They are both mysterious and profound, the mystery within the mystery, the gateway to all marvelous wonders. So you can see that that different translations have a different sort of different take, and one may speak to you more than the other, which is why it's sort of nice to read a few of them. I know Wayne Dyer mentioned he had 5 translations he was working with, just because each offers you something a little bit different. And again, you can find many, many of them online for free if you don't want to order them. So Tao that can be spoken is not the true and eternal Tao. Names that can be named are not the true and eternal names. So that was really all I wanted to sort of share for this week, so that we can get going and then hopefully come and with our contemplations and share what arose for us. Maybe it was a feeling, maybe it was some sort of creative expression, maybe it was a realization, maybe it was a thought process that occurred. And there are a couple of practices I thought I would point out. If you wanted to consider for the week ahead, if you're going to join me in taking one of these a week. And that is just sort of for the first week, getting used to the Tao. As I say, it's sort of a bit mind-boggling to start with. So, as I said, we're not trying to understand it, but really sort of tune into the essence. And that can take a while. And for each of us, it's probably going to be very different. So some ideas would be, you know, to take this short verse out into nature. If you happen to be in nature over the next week, if it's not too cold where you are, and just sit with it. Or another way is to print out a picture of Lao Tzu. There are some lovely ones. If you Google image Lao Tzu, he's adorable. So it's very nice to have him on your altar or next to you or in your pocket. And you could simply, as Wayne Dyer did, just sort of sit down and ask Lao Tzu what he's thinking. Another name I'm told is Lord Lanto. They believe that was Lao Tzu. If you're into any of the rays, he was he's seen as the keeper of the, can't remember which ray, but it's the crown chakra ray. And there's a very nice sort of glorious technicolor picture of Lord Lanto as Lao Tzu. So one, yes, you could sort of just begin to understand or get to know Lao Tzu and the Tao by meditating on Lao Tzu. Another is, of course, you could just ask Lao Tzu to sit with you while you're reading the Tao. If you remember from our Bhagavad Gita days, there was that beautiful story about when you hold the Gita in your hands, you're actually holding Krishna, which I feel just applies to any spiritual teaching. So sort of bearing in mind that Lao Tzu is sitting in front of you when you're actually looking at a verse of the Tao. And sometimes that can help us sort of drop in a little bit more, feeling like we're sat in satsang with a teacher. Writing in your contemplation, sometimes I find if I write things will come through. And I'm sure these are all things that we practice ourselves, so I'm not telling you anything new here. Putting him on the altar, yep, you mentioned that one. Meditating on it. And hopefully next week we can sort of share what works for us. Perhaps if we're very new to the Tao, it can seem super alien and foreign. And if we've never been to China and it's not a teaching we're familiar with, then it can even seem even more foreign. So it's just a case of working out how to get comfortable so that we allow ourselves to drop in and allow sort of the Tao to do the teaching for us. And then there are a couple of specific suggestions that I found for this particular first verse. One is from a chap called William Martin. And his translation is, instead of, the Tao that can be talked about is not the eternal Tao. He says, talking about the path is not walking the path. And thinking about life is not living life. So his suggestion, and I thought maybe this is something fun to think about over the next week, is asking ourselves throughout the day, am I living right now or am I thinking about living? And seeing if you can detect the subtle difference. So that's one suggestion for the week. This Tao that cannot be named, that cannot be talked about or put into words. It's not the eternal Tao. So beginning to sort of notice some subtle differences in your week of what you're seeing and what you're thinking. And this is very much in line with some of the practices we're doing in A Course in Miracles right now. And then Salala Tower suggests just sort of getting in touch with your inner wisdom. So in every way that works for you, cultivating that over your first week as you're beginning to come to the Tao, so that your inner wisdom can more easily guide you through the reading of the Tao and the contemplation. So that was a good idea, I thought. And then Wayne Dyer suggests seeing beyond form. So trying to look at sort of the world through a lens of the Tao rather than what the thoughts are telling you. And again, this is very much in line with the Course in Miracles. Okay, is there anything I'm missing? Let me just have a quick look. Yes, he says, practice letting go of the names and labels. Because you'll find yourself as the week goes wanting to label the Tao, and it might drive you a bit insane of trying to think, well, yes, but you know, I want to be able to label this thing, and then understanding that the whole point is that you can't, that you're sitting in that. So you can apply that same philosophy to all sorts of labels throughout the week. But I don't want to add too much because I really want us each to have the chance to come to it fresh ourselves and sit with it and contemplate without being sort of swayed by other people's guidance, and then sharing that next week if you're so inclined, because I just thought that would really try and reinforce in us the idea that this has to come from within ourselves. So to simplify things down, instead of thinking about everyone else's advice for now, let's just try and tune in and build that inner voice, that inner guidance from the Tao that lies within us. Okay, so that's it. Does anyone have any questions before I play a song? So one thing I just want to mention is you are welcome to email me at any point. It's helen.avery@gmail.com. And ask me for any of these names of the books or the links to some audios. Alan Watts has a great audio as well on the Tao Te Ching, and I have a list that I'm very happy to share. I can also just type out the chapter for the week and send it to you. Cheryl is very kindly putting the recording of tonight online on the Eastern Wisdom page in awakeningtogether.com, .org rather, so that you can listen again, should you want to. With that, I'm going to leave you with a song. And the reason I'm going to leave you with this song is because I heard it back in November, and I felt very moved when I heard it. And it has a few words. It takes a while for the words to kick in, but you'll get there. And the words seem to be Sanskrit words, and I came away from listening to this song, it's a very long song, and thinking, wow, that song really, really spoke to me. I wonder what the words mean. They must mean something very meaningful, and it must be a symbol for me. And when I finally found the singer, her CD, she writes in her CD, I have no idea what these words mean. I heard them sung somewhere. I thought they were nice. I've no idea if I've spelt them right. But I just decided to make up a song with these words. And so I took her literal spelling and Googled and Googled and Googled. And there is, I cannot find a meaning. And what I got from that was, well, how lovely. That there's just an essence of this song that I cannot put words around. But there's something in the unwords, the lack of words. Yes, he must not be named. So I wanted to play it for you so that maybe you can listen to it and see what the essence is without even worrying about the words, because I'm assuring you, you will never find a translation. Okay. So here we go.
Do
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed not knowing, not being able to put any labels on that particular tune. And I look forward to seeing you next week. So I hope you have a lovely week, and I hope that at least some of us take this chapter one and contemplate it at some point over the week and get to share next week what arose for us. So until then, blessed week, everybody. Namaste. Thank you very much.